You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the 23rd annual Sled Dog Race takes place this weekend in Bayfield. We'll learn more about the different races taking place and what it takes to be a participant. Now, President Trump delivered his first State of the Union address before Congress last night. Here's part of his opening message.
Less than 1 year has passed since I first stood at this podium in this majestic chamber to speak on behalf of the American people and to address their concerns, their hopes, and their dreams. That night, our new administration had already taken very swift action. A new tide of optimism was already sweeping across our land. Each day since, we have gone forward with a clear vision and a righteous mission to make America great again for all Americans.
The State of the Union clocked in as the third longest in history behind two of President Bill Clinton's addresses, according to NPR. Aaron Call is director of debate at the University of Michigan and editor and co-author of the book The State of the Union Is, Memorable Addresses of the Last 50 Years. Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Well, Aaron, big picture, what is the goal a president goes in with in the State of the Union address?
Yeah, I mean, it gives you the opportunity to address 40 to 50 million people, which is very unique today. And you want to do two things mainly. You want to talk about your accomplishments in office. And so for President Trump, he got to talk about the tax cut legislation, the strength of the economy. And you also want to be forward-looking and let the country know what you want to do in the next year legislatively. And he talked about things like infrastructure spending, some funding for fighting the opioid epidemic. And so it's both looking to the past and making sure you're getting the proper credit for some things, but also showing where you want to take the country ahead of the midterm elections, which are just in November.
Before we get into some of the content of the speech, as we mentioned, this was on the longer end for State of the Union speeches. I listened on the treadmill. I got my steps in, no problem. What do you make of the length of the speech?
Yeah, I think it was way too long, and it detracted from the overall speech and message. You know, he gave an address to the joint session of Congress last February. That was 60 minutes. That's kind of, you know, pretty par for the course. And there have been some great State of the Union addresses over the years. Ronald Reagan, Lyndon Johnson, really memorable addresses that were 30 to 40 minutes in length. But, you know, in 2018, with all of the things and social media and technological advances, it's a lot to ask for somebody to sit and give you the undivided attention for that amount of time. I mean, he had some good accomplishments that he talked about early in the speech, but then by the end, you just wonder if some of those are forgotten because of everything that followed. And so I definitely think it was a bit too long, and you definitely don't want to get in that Clinton territory of 90 or so minutes, because at the time, those were derided of being way too long, and you know, Trump kind of came close to matching that.
You wrote a piece before the address suggesting President Trump take a page from President Bill Clinton's playbook, not the length of those two State of the Unions, but what lessons could a president, Trump or a future president, take from President Clinton's States of the Union?
Yeah, the Bill Clinton was, you know, length of the address notwithstanding, was excellent at getting positive results from his State of the Union addresses. In general, you know, according to data from Gallup that started in 1978, there is not very much of a bump kind of associated in job approval rating after the conclusion of these speeches. But Bill Clinton kind of, you know, went against that. And after his 96 speech, he saw a 6-point bump in 1998, all the way up to 10 points. And he really used these speeches well. He'd use it as an opportunity to kind of pivot towards the center. He talked about things like welfare reform, V-chip technology, and things like that. And also to talk about his accomplishments. The economy was very strong during that time as well. And he really was able to focus singularly on his accomplishments and kind of what he wanted his agenda to be in the future, despite a lot of scandals surrounding his administrations. There was a Whitewater investigation in 96, then the Monica Lewinsky affair became public, and then his Senate impeachment trial in 1999. And while all those things were swirling around him,
he was able to compartmentalize what was happening and just focus on the attention at hand and the address. And the public really appreciated that, and because, you know, you want the president to make sure that they have time and attention on you and your needs. And that since he was able to deliver that, I think it showed that he was an effective multitasker and still able to execute the duties of the presidency despite everything happening around him. And I think Trump tried to do that. He didn't mention Russia or the allegations of sexual misconduct or Stormy Daniels or anything like that. It was about what he had done in the economy, what he wants to do legislatively for the next year, and not even a hint of mention of all those things that are occurring, like President Nixon did in 1974, where he talked about ending Watergate after a year. There was no mention of that, and I think that's that he handled it correctly.
Aaron Call is with us, director of debate at the University of Michigan, editor and co-author of the book The State of the Union Is, Memorable Addresses of the Last 50 Years. He's putting President Trump's State of the Union address in historical context. Aaron, it's become a tradition now. I guess it wasn't always this way to have invited guests and highlighting them during the speech. How did President Trump make use of that?
I think overuse would probably be the way to describe it. Yes, that tradition started with President Reagan in 1982, and Lenny Skutnik, who was a hero that saved some people from a plane crash in Washington, D.C., and he was a federal employee. And that worked so well, and the reception was so good that every president since then has followed that. And even in the address to the joint session of Congress last February, President Trump invited Karen Owens, the widow of a Navy SEAL that had died in an intelligence raid in Yemen. And that was probably the pinnacle of that speech. And so he'd, you know, kind of gone to that well before and it had been successful. But when you expand it to over a dozen people, you know, everyone's message becomes a little bit less memorable, and kind of the uniqueness of that experience declines. And I think that it was an overuse. I see what he was trying to do, especially by recognizing so many people early in the speech. You want to build bipartisanship, get people in the audience from both sides of the political aisle applauding. But when you keep going to it, it shifts the focus to the speech over these individuals as opposed to the accomplishments and the future agenda of the presidency. And it also contributed to the long duration of the speech and this awkward clapping that occurred, where he kept clapping so much into the microphone that became a distraction as well, and, you know, proved for some fodder on social media. And so it just by having so many guests contributed to, I think, many negative parts of the speech, and it manifested itself in a lot of probably unintended ways.
I feel like I've seen State of the Union addresses that range anywhere from, you know, more symbolic, vision-oriented addresses to real nitty-gritty laundry lists of, you know, every policy item down to reorganizing the zip code. I don't know. How did President Trump do on that big-picture vision versus minutiae and detail side of things?
Yeah, it was a little bit out of the norm. You know, I don't think it neatly falls into either of those two categories. I mean, he's not a policy wonk, and, you know, like President Clinton will have a list of 100 things that he wants to do, just because in our polarized politics, those things aren't going to happen. And I don't think anybody accuses him of having a big kind of vision or philosophy. He's a relatively new politician with a, you know, kind of little experience in that area. But I think the main message of what he did was he wanted to try to connect the successes of his administration to the ordinary lives of everyday Americans. And, you know, I think that was the goal. And because it's important, the economy is doing well, yet more people still give President Obama credit, even than President Trump. And so even though he's been in office for a year, and so he really wanted to put his signature on the economic strength and show how his programs and policies help ordinary everyday Americans, which is important when we get into the midterm elections and votings and things like that. And so trying to connect those dots was something that he did, which was a little bit unique. It was close, but just because of, you know, a few things, I don't think completely hit the mark, but was a little bit ingenious in terms of the approach to that speech. I don't think we've seen it very commonly in the past.
Aaron, as we wrap up, as I understand it, originally the State of the Union was written and handed, you know, to Congress, then radio, live addresses, TV. And now we've got, as you mentioned, the internet. People can watch, they can double screen, they can watch live fact checking, live Twitter responses. The president may come up with follow ups on Twitter. Does this all change the way we interpret the State of the Union?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it used to be, you know, under 1,000 words and, like you said, written. And now it's just a much bigger production, you know, and that's in prime time and the size of the audience is so large. But no, things like fact checking in real time and, you know, the backgrounds of all of the guests are going to be there, and the short attention span. I think before there used to be State of the Unions and then the president would travel to additional states to try to keep that momentum of what the content of the speech was about to try to get the most mileage out of it. Now, what we talked about in the run up to the speech and now today with so many things in the news happening, it's a lot shorter of a window for, you know, what's going to happen in that discussion. And so it's still viewed, I think the numbers just came out, about 44 million people last night, but it's, you know, basically just one day and maybe on each other side a day or so of coverage. But the long lasting impact and way in which it frames the media narrative is really been eliminated because of the fast moving news cycle and social media and all kind of the technology that exists that, you know, don't give this its kind of exclusivity, which it has going back hundreds of years.
Aaron, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. Anytime.
That's Aaron Call, Director of Debate at the University of Michigan and editor and co-author of The State of the Union Is, Memorable Addresses of the Last 50 Years. He weighed in on how President Trump's first State of the Union address went and how it compared to those by previous leaders.